Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky, the Lakers with a huge 120-117 overtime win on Wednesday over the Miami Heat. Russell Westbrook comes up huge down the stretch in the fourth quarter and into OT. We'll talk about that and Malik Monk and so much more next.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to let you know this episode of Locked On Lakers is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than a place to just get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. I want to thank you as well for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. We get this thing up for you and appreciate you guys tuning in bright and early, starting your day with Locked On Lakers, and encourage you obviously to find other shows. Look for the team that the Lakers are playing, the Locked On Fantasy podcast, Locked On NBA, tons of great stuff out there on the network. So we appreciate that.
After us, obviously.
After us. No, that's the second listen. We are the first one.
Don't be second, third, fourth, fifth, seventh, whatever. No, but
after
yes,
this one.
Big dogs right here.
Yeah. anyway, so that was the worst dog impression I think anybody.
I was going to let it go as long as you acknowledged it. I don't know. I don't know what animal it was. It's late right now, but it's not that late.
Anybody ever seen a chicken?
You've got a small child that presumably you teach animal noises because that's what you do to all kids. There's a reason, I guess, that your youngest, your daughter, can't make an animal noise to save her life.
Nope, that's it. No, she thinks that's a dog. Anyway,
I learned it from watching you, Dad.
All right, so the Lakers kick off Wednesday's game at home against a very good Miami Heat team, a team tied, I believe, for the best record in the Eastern Conference, with obviously no LeBron James, no Talen Horton-Tucker, no Kendrick Nunn, but then no Rajon Rondo and no Austin Reeves, who were both out with hamstring injuries. So super duper shorthanded, only nine guys available, I think, at tip-off. Dwight Howard would make that eight very quickly. maybe we'll get into that. Dwight fouled out six fouls in. Well, let's not get bogged down in it early. But Dwight fouled out in 11 minutes and 22 seconds of play.
The only reason I want to bring it up is during the Spectrum broadcast, there was a great stat they threw out. Shout out to our buddy Joey Ramirez, who uncovered this. Dwight's foul out was the quickest foul out since 2009, Andrew Bynum, also 11 minutes. I thought that was pretty quirky.
Keeping
fun.
In the family. Very good.
Yeah.
All right.
They were traded for each other.
This was a game that the Lakers were set up to lose. I don't think there's any question about that. If you're looking at it, given the struggles that they've had, for the first stretch of the season, and very similar, I thought, Andy, to what they did against Charlotte, where they played an imperfect game the other night, but still won it in overtime. They came out and played a normal game. And I thought that was a really great sign. Like, they were in this one. There were something like 40 lead changes back and forth. It was a very tight game throughout. And
nobody ever had a double-digit lead on either side.
Yeah, it felt like a regular basketball game. And I'm thinking to myself, the entire game here, even as Miami started to pull away late and forced the Lakers into a late fourth quarter comeback, like, they could lose this game and I still feel good about it. And then they came back and won it. And then you feel even better.
Yeah. I mean, the Lakers caught a bit of a break in their own right with Jimmy Butler getting hurt in the first half.
He
hurt his ankle, but at the same time, the Lakers are so shorthanded. Like, I mentioned this just for context. I'm not looking to take away anything from this. Nobody could look at the Lakers.
No, but it's where I should have pointed. It's worth pointing out that Jimmy Butler only played 12 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and Bam Adebayo got into so much foul trouble in the first half. Udonis Haslam, there was a sighting in the he played five minutes in the first half.
5 minutes for UD.
They also, I don't remember who it was on Miami that was orchestrating this, but somebody tried to set up Haslam with an alley oop that I'm pretty sure put him in traction.
The PJ Tucker had a phenomenal offensive rebound dunk in the that basically put the game into OT for Miami. And the basic reaction on Twitter was, I didn't know PJ Tucker could still do that. I'm not sure I knew PJ Tucker could ever do that.
It was like, remember 3 years ago when Danny Green had that monster putback dunk? I didn't know
what the hell did that come from.
Yeah,
the adrenaline that that these guys feel reminds you of when you read the stories of somebody who lifts a car off somebody off the side of the highway,
when a baby does it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the adrenaline, the human spirit and adrenaline.
A baby not named Kal-El or anything. Right.
I think it is fair to say that the basketball gods, at least to me, smiled on the Lakers here a little bit. Miami missed 8 free throws the entire game. 5 of them, I believe, were in the last 50 seconds of overtime. Yeah. They caught some break. The Tyler Hero shot that could have tied it did everything but go in. The Lakers made a couple mistakes. So they got that's true of a lot of games. And I think the basketball gods might have owed the Lakers one.
Yeah.
Over the course of the year. And the big thing, and you pointed this out on Twitter at Cam Brothers as the game was going on, the response here, given what we saw in Portland, the response to this game, the response from the Charlotte game, this could have gone either way. And the Lakers have pulled it back in a really positive direction.
Yeah. I mean, this was something I know I harped on a lot on Monday's podcast, which was recorded after that Saturday loss. That was a game where they kept talking about whether Melo, whether Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, Frank Vogel, that they didn't play hard enough. And as you pointed out, sometimes that can be code for a lot of different things or just generic speak for, we didn't play well, but I'm not going to give you specifics. I felt pretty strongly this was them being dead honest and dead accurate in the assessment of a lot of what went wrong in that game. They didn't play well, and they happened to catch Portland at a very rare good time for this season. Damian Lillard looking to get out of a slump. But once they lost Anthony Davis in that game when he had that stomach illness, you could see the team collectively just be like, screw it. We don't have it, and it is not worth the effort to try to fight through it. And afterwards, all of those guys were pissed off at themselves, I think, for that. I think they really recognized, look, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose. But let's at least not lose in a way that we're just completely ashamed of ourselves. It really felt like they were, if ashamed is too strong, somewhere in that neighborhood. And since then, they have responded really, really well, even at times against Charlotte or against Miami, where they haven't played well, although I thought on balance against Miami, they played
I thought on balance well. Against Miami, they played a better, much better game against Miami throughout than they did against Charlotte.
But either way, what they did over the course of both those games, both of which went to overtime, is they played their asses off. They played really hard.
And with much more composure on Wednesday than they did on Monday, because if you go back and remember, if you missed the game, not you, Andy, I know you didn't, but if you didn't see the Charlotte game, you probably read about it by now. Part of the reason Charlotte was able to push that game into overtime is because the Lakers gave them 5 free throws, all to LaMelo Ball off technical fouls and delays of game and all kind. Another moment where their composure was in question. Now, look, they were composed in the overtime. They were composed, but I thought, Wednesday was a game that they had to not only stay composed, because Miami is a very disciplined team.
Except to the free throw line, apparently.
I assume,
of overtime.
I assume they weren't freelancing. Guys, let's screw you, Spo. I'm just going to brick these.
No, I'm just saying they lost a lot of their mental discipline down the stretch of the overtime.
But they had to come back. And it was notable that both they were able to do that, but also kind of do the blow by blow back and forth thing. Again, I think it was 40 lead changes. Nobody with, more than a 10-point lead throughout the game and stay with it. And here's where I think it was really significant. The guy who really helped them push that comeback, Andy, was Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
Plus Malik Monk, two guys who have been up and down, to say the least, throughout the early season. So let's talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Back better than ever with a new web interface for the start of the basketball season. More props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. So head to the new updated desktop or mobile website. Sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code Locked On to receive said bonus from basketball, football, NHL, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the games start.
Russell Westbrook has been all over the damn place, as we have spent many a show talking about. And it was funny for
you
me.
You may recall, Andy, as far back as Wednesday when we talked about that.
I'm old enough to remember the last time we talked about his mercurial performances over the course of the season. This was a game where, you know, there were moments where he did a lot of really good stuff throughout the game. It's not what I mean. But like, you hear the criticism of Russ. Oh, he puts up triple doubles, but they're empty because they're just stat hoarding and all these other things. And my position with Russ has always been like, okay, game to game, but like over the course of a season, you can't average a triple double emptily. Like that's just impossible. Like that's too good. But it doesn't.
If it were that simple, a lot more people would do it.
Well put. But that said, putting up a triple double, as we saw on the night Russ did the quad double, is not automatically an indication that you're dominating the game or you're playing like a universally good one. Like, depending on the player, it can be an indicator of that, but with Westbrook, it isn't. And I thought while he was playing better, certainly, than he has in other games throughout the first half or whatever, there were still a lot of wild moments, bad turnovers, stuff like that going on where you're like, he's not playing great. It's better. I like it. But that fourth quarter, though, and into the OT, that was like the Russell Westbrook star, get you a bucket, playing in control, found AD for the pass, found Monk for a couple shots, like orchestrating elite guy.
Yeah, I tweeted out during the game, Brian, at Cam Brothers, that Westbrook at times watching him will make you feel like a nervous parent watching your kid play sports, because like there's a part of you that wants your kid to have the hero moment. Mm-hmm. And there's another part of you that wants the ball nowhere near your kid. So no matter what happens,
at least it can't be his fault.
Exactly. Right. It's like that scene, remember in Parenthood, where Steve Martin's oldest son, who is not a particularly good athlete, he's out in right field.
He's terrible.
That ball gets hit to him. And you can see all Steve Martin wants in that sequence is that final out to go nowhere near him. And he ends up getting the catch, and Steve Martin breaks out into like a hysterical dance. Like, Westbrook does that to you as a viewer, particularly if you are a viewer that is so into the Lakers, it feels like every year you have, you know, assorted children that you are raising for 82 games and however long the playoffs last. Like it really is that type of ride. It's something I know I've talked a lot about recently, Brian. Like, Laker fans are just going to have to lean into this thing. Like, you have to put on your seatbelts, like, you know, make sure you are using all your mirrors, and then just accept the fact that this ride is going to be wild. But like tonight, you can have a lot of incredible moments that remind you why Russell Westbrook is a first ballot Hall of Famer in the first place.
And it was stuff that was going downhill. It was all the things that you look at. And there have been a couple games and different stretches and different moments where you look at it and you're reminded, but you know, the Lakers needed buckets. They needed people to go get buckets. We'll talk about Malik Monk here in a second. You know, as somebody who went out and got it and what this sort of did for him in the rotation or just say the least, Andy, it was a night Malik Monk needed on a night the Lakers needed Malik Monk. Westbrook. Monday, Tuesday, I forget which one it was. We talked a lot about how like if you were somebody like me who's always admired Westbrook and enjoys watching him play just because of the sheer energy and force and will that he plays with. Nobody cares about what they're doing more than Russell Westbrook. Deeply cares about what he's doing. It's still really uncomfortable when you watch it every day and it's tied to a team that you're following, whether or not they win or lose. Like, it's extra, as the kids would say.
Yeah. As I said to you back when this news broke, you think you want to see him every day,
but you don't. No,
I don't
right.
think you
no,
actually no, do. No,
don't meet your heroes.
Andy. Yeah. If you're really this big of a Westbrook fan, you might want to keep it more of a sporadic visits.
But the other part of it is like, you know, the intellectual part of your brain understands that like first half Russ is not second half Russ over the course of his career. Certainly not over the last couple, especially you laid that out in Tuesday's show in detail, but we got a taste of what second half Russ might look like. And, you know, the symmetry with AD was good. Like the pass, he threw a pass to AD and I think it might have been Darius Soriano, our friend at Born Blue and Gold and Silver Screen, who pointed out like that pass, you know, the on the break, the late thing, you know, where AD banks it in for a critical bucket, was everything that is both thrilling and terrifying about Russ at the same time. It was an incredibly audacious pass, you know, in a tight spot at a critical moment, but it was on point and perfect. And like you hope that this is where it's going. And it is a reminder that they still do have a fair amount of time to get there, despite some real injury concerns, which we can also talk about before this thing is over, because two more guys on the shelf tonight, but at least for Westbrook tonight, you saw it. And I was excited to see it.
I mean, look, you and I covered the last 10 years of Kobe's career, and I have lived in LA for the entirety of Kobe's career, and I've probably seen anywhere from 80 to 90% of the games that Kobe played. And, you know, the same things that made Kobe one of the greatest players ever, like, and at times one of the most smart, intuitive players beyond just the sheer talent, are also the things that could make him confounding, frustrating, would sometimes piss you off, piss his teammates off, certainly piss off Phil Jackson. They're the same thing. And that's what ultimately made him Kobe. And there is a reason that Kobe and Westbrook, you know, are cut from that same cloth. And Kobe used to say that all the time. Kobe used to say that Westbrook was one of the guys in the league that he admired absolutely the most, loved absolutely the most. And the
because I think of the intensity with which he plays.
I
think that was the foundation of it.
But also it's the intensity for sure and the competitiveness. Like Russ is hyper competitive, even by these standards of hyper competitiveness. Mm-hmm. But he's also fearless. Like Russ
I'm
Kobe,
including that in there for sure.
Yeah. They shared that commonality of fearlessness and that willingness to fail, sometimes even unnecessarily fail or fail in ways that maybe were more spectacular, more complicated than necessary, but that's ultimately who they were as players. And, you know, Russ obviously has a ways to go before you start feeling like the good far outweighs the bad, like it did with Kobe. But, you know, there is that commonality to it. And also I think, again, as a teammate of Russ, as a coach of Russ, as people who watch the Lakers as fans, there is just a certain amount of you got to accept it. You just do for your own sanity. You have to.
Before we get to Malik Monk here, just a couple other things to point out with the Lakers. It was a night. It was a very strange night for them offensively, as most nights are. They turned the ball over their typical selves, meaning a lot. 22 turnovers. With overtime isn't catastrophically bad, again, by their standards at the very least. They only made it to the free throw line 16 times, but they shot 47.5% from three and 50% from the floor overall. And you know, meanwhile, Miami, they held Miami, who was a, you know, without Jimmy Butler, particularly in the second half, not a great offensive team, but nonetheless, you hold Miami to 41% from the floor.
I mean, they played good defense against them in the first half.
And I was going to say that, too. And, but critically, they played defense really effectively over the last, you know, 6-7 minutes of the fourth quarter when they really needed to find ways to get stops. And they did. And so, like, you know, is this another one of these games where you look at it and you say, they can look forward to, well, you know, are the Lakers going to shoot 47% from 3-point range very often? No, but I feel like, and I saw a little bit of this kind of scrolling through Lakers Twitter. They got lucky. They, you know, you can't count on this. Of course not. No game that they win now with all the guys that they're missing. And this is sort of the point of when I see these tweets, there, none of these things are templates. There is no template for winning when you're missing all of this. If you win, it does not matter how you win. Give the Lakers credit for winning and move on to the next one. And, you know, are they going to beat San Antonio, you know, in a weird 12:30 game over the weekend? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But if they do, give them credit. I don't care if San Antonio is a relatively mediocre team. Are they going to win? Who they play? Minnesota on Friday?
Yeah.
Yep. Are they going to win that game? I don't know. But if they do, I don't care that Minnesota isn't off to a good start. The way the Lakers are constructed right now, if they win, don't look for the template. Don't look for the thing that is going to be repeatable over and over and over again. Just be like, you know what? They found a way to win.
Live in the now, baby.
Yes, under difficult circumstances. And one guy who definitely found a way to live in the now and now the hell through out of this game in that regard was Malik Monk. 27 points on 10 of 13 from the floor. Let's talk about him next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving community since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends, family, they come together to reconnect. It's a place you always look forward to stopping at on a long road trip. You rest your legs, you recharge, you refuel, get back out on the road feeling good. Win or lose, it's where the home team or the away team, they get together. You know, you might see the Lakers in heat at a McDonald's tonight because, frankly, they earned it. You and I used to always get taken there by a Grandma Nini after Little League, after soccer games, sit down with those cheeseburgers, the fries. You get the fries with all the different McNugget dipping sauces. That's the best way to go. So head to your local McDonald's, refuel, reconnect. Did somebody say it? Locked On Lakers watch party? Ba-da-da-ba-ba.
Real quick, Brian, just about how nutty it would be if you walked into McDonald's and Rob Pelinka just brought the team, or Frank Vogel just brought the guys in after a big win.
he's reading The Alchemist to him.
Carmelo Anthony is a 37-year-old man brought to McDonald's by his coach after the game.
Do they all arrive in one big van?
And they're still wearing their uniforms.
Oh, real quick.
As we would, you know, I mean, well, you don't change.
Okay. The best with that, like, one of those really rare superstar athletes, they're just like us moments that you and I experienced along these lines. After the Lakers won the 2010 championship and all the celebration, all the craziness going on in the locker room, you and I have to, you know, write up everything we're doing at the time for ESPN, videos, whatnot. We're leaving Staples Center and we run into Artest in the LA Live Plaza, and he's still wearing his uniform, walking around the plaza by his own admission, going to the club, but he's in his Laker uniform, like the jersey and shorts. It was amazing.
Spectacular.
Really quick before we get to Malik Monk, I just wanted to bring up something that I thought was really critical in this game and reinforces a lot of what you were talking about with the good percentages from the field overall, but also from three and how they got there. The Lakers did a fantastic job in this game against Miami, reading off double teams in the post and kicking out. Like, AD did a terrific job of it. He was getting doubled. Melo was getting doubled in the post. I don't think he's been doubled this much inside since, like, the Knicks, if not Denver. And he did a great job finding open guys, or, you know, the ball would swing around afterwards. I thought that was a really big component in those two really good percentages.
Yeah, absolutely. And you say, you know, Avery Bradley was 5 of 8. Wayne Ellington was 4 of 6. Malik Monk was 4 of 7. It was sort of the opposite of the Charlotte game, where basically Carmelo Anthony was 7 of 10 and everybody else sucked. Melo had his first off shooting night at Staples Center as a Laker. He was only 1 of 5 from 3-point range. He only had 12 points. So even with, you know, 24, AD played, I thought, a pretty good game. 24 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block. And, you know, we talked about Westbrook, 25 points, 12 rebounds, 14 assists. Did have the 8 turnovers, but those were front-loaded more to
front-loaded. And also, too, when you're doing that much
you know, ball handling, he's going to have 4 or 5 a night. I mean, you know, it's easy, exactly. Even when he's playing well.
Exactly. I mean, they're just when you have this much responsibility with the roster.
It's just what kind. It's what are you doing?
Yeah.
Where are you throwing the ball? And some of them were just like, yeek. But anyway, the Lakers on a night where Melo, who's been their third guy with LeBron out, somebody else who can step up and put up points, or on nights where Westbrook is really struggling. They needed a third guy, and they got it from 3-point range from Avery Bradley. They got it from Wayne Ellington, but really they got it from Malik Monk. 10 of 13, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. We've talked about Andy. If you know, the template for Monk is be good enough defensively and hit shots. If you're hitting your shots and you're good enough defensively, you're going to play. And that might change night to night. Tonight, to say the least, he hit that formula.
Yeah, I had a feeling early on in this game because I believe he hit his first couple shots. Like he pretty much started and ended this game playing really well. I felt like he was in a good situation just because, you know, we've talked about lately. He had been pressing a lot, and he seemed like somebody that was cognizant of the idea, or at least the threat of falling out of the rotation. And this was a night
certainly where we've been cognizant of it.
Well, but I think he had too. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, if we are, I guarantee you he is.
Right. Right. And I think he really benefited from knowing that unless he was just an absolute train wreck in this game, his minutes and his shots were basically guaranteed because somebody needed to be out there. And in particular, somebody who actually could make plays semi-commonly, much less the way he did tonight. He actually, I thought, did a really nice job as a playmaker as well. Mm-hmm. He was going to stay on the floor, and I think he was less tempted to try too hard. And it came out in ways that were beyond the offense. This was the best game Malik Monk has had defensively as a Laker by a pretty wide margin. I mean, you know, he was not perfect, and he's not going to be, because there are certain things that even if he's busting his ass, he can't overcome the fact that he's a slight guy, and he's going to get overpowered.
He's like Melo. The goal here is not Monk is going to be great. Is Monk going to be good enough?
And I thought a lot of this game,
I thought he was fine.
You know, I think at times he was better than fine. There were some sequences where I thought he actually played really good defense. This, I think, had to have done a lot for, if not his confidence, just like the ability to relax a bit.
Well, what's been his deal throughout his entire relatively short career is wild swings of inconsistency. Like anybody mm-hmm. who has ever played fantasy basketball understands the Malik Monk experience in that way. It's like you see 3 games in a row where he's putting up huge numbers offensively. You jump on the waiver wire and you grab Malik Monk, and then like you actually put him in your lineup and you're like, WTF, he's ruining my team because of these wild, you know, 3 or 4 games at a time. And certainly the Lakers have seen that, where he got off to a really hot start shooting the ball. And then, you know, you get to the Cleveland game where he plays 5 minutes, doesn't even take a shot, goes 0-for-6 in the first Houston game, 0-for-3 in the second one, only takes 3 shots against Oklahoma City in that second game. You know, and so he had 3 points in 4 games. He comes back against Portland, hits 3 of 7 from 3, 2 of 4 against Charlotte, although one of those was a miracle buzzer beater. And, you know, but then tonight, you know, Wednesday night against Miami is 4 of 7. Like it's ironing out that inconsistency so that you can be a relatively reliable offensive performer, again, while being adequate on the other side of the ball. that's going to allow him to play. I don't know what a night like this does when other guys are available. I think it does a lot for Monk, but he doesn't get to live in a world where, you know, Reeves isn't available, Nunn isn't available, Rondo's not available. Yeah. THT isn't available, LeBron isn't available, which impacts his playing time. Like, all of those guys not being around means that Monk gets to play 34 minutes. He doesn't get to live in that world, even if he's playing well. And so how does he adjust to it? How does Frank Vogel adjust his tolerance to some degree of Monk? I'm not even lobbying to get more playing time. That's not what I'm doing here. Because I don't think he's necessarily deserved it in a lot of ways. You know, gives back too much of what he's been, you know, the nights where he's been good on offense. But like, it's another one of these fascinating moments the Lakers are in. Like, I don't know what to do with this performance because it doesn't show me he should be playing 25 minutes a night, but it does show me what he's capable of and why the Lakers were like, let's go get this guy, because at $1.5 million, there are going to be five nights over the course of the season where he does this and helps you win a game. That's worth the money right there.
Well, what I think it does do for Monk is removing Russ from this equation, because he's his own category. He is, you know, he's one of the big three on this team. With the possible exception of Kendrick Nunn, there's nobody else that is strictly a backcourt player that can theoretically do what Monk did in this game. And seeing it is, you know, proof positive. And I think that is, you know, like, offensively being able to be that dynamic as an overall scorer, but also the ability to do some playmaking and then, you know, hopefully do no harm defensively. Again, we'll see when Nunn gets back. But, you know, THT is at this point not exactly categorizable. And also, he's going to have to do more small forward stuff and, you know, maybe even four at times, you know, times two. What, he's going to be all over the place. But I think that if you're looking for like sort of what do you make of it, it's all right. This is what I can do. You ain't got many other people, you know, especially with Bazemore is in a wicked ass slump right now.
We'll talk about him maybe on Friday's show.
It's flown under the radar.
Kent Bazemore, he did not play in the fourth quarter. And I want to say, I mean, how many minutes did he play on Wednesday? Not many.
22. I mean, it's flown under the radar. Right. It's flown under the radar because there's been so much else going on with this team.
Bazemore sucked. Recently.
He has really, really struggled offensively. I think defensively.
He's just struggled, period.
Last thing I wanted to point out, for those keeping score at home, Anthony Davis hit a three in this game. First three since October 29th versus Cleveland.
Yes, that's not good.
And also, for all of the issues with this team, they are 3-0 in overtime.
3-0 in overtime. They are creeping up near the top 15, or, you know, into that top 15 defensively, and are still a top 10 team offensively. It is not as bad as it seems, given everything that's been going on. Maybe something else we'll talk about for Fridays. Maybe we'll make Friday an optimistic, feel good episode, except for the parts where we talk about the Alex Caruso interview.
Although it depends, we might use that for Friday. We might save it for Monday, though.
Maybe we'll do that.
Bulls, yes, the Bulls are going to be there on Monday.
Let's not taint the all optimism show that now planned for Friday.
It's going to be a feel good Friday, damn it.
Maybe
except for the parts we don't feel good about.
Right. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of everyday first listen. All that other stuff comes second. We come first. We were like Kobe. We eat first and everybody else can eat second.
Choose for yourself who's Pow among the podcasts.
Or anyway, I don't care who eats after us.
Pow ate second, according to Kobe.
Right, but that's none of my concern. I'm concerned only about us. Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Subscribe to that. Get us past 4,000 subscribers. We're really, really close.
Yes. Thank you.
Mentally, I would feel better if we were over that 4K figure. And we'll see everybody Friday. Thanks.